everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 1999 played Mike Wong or God in the indie film, The Auteur Theory. And myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil. Remember, you can get the full version of this entire podcast with so much more bonus material, so much cool stuff, when you sign up to become a patron at patreon.com/ The Delta Flyers. So, The Auteur Theory, 1999. What was that?
The Auteur Theory. Yeah, I did so many independent films while I was on the show.
Yeah, you did.
It was just one after another after another. It was a film festival, from what I recall. The movie was about a film festival.
Yes.
And these are all different people that had, you know, directors had their film at the film festival, similar to when you did Slam Dance. Remember? And I was there and I supported you. So this is what it is. And I think somebody's going around murdering all the directors, I think is what it is.
That's so very funny.
Yeah. And so and in the film that I'm in, the independent film that I am in within the film within the film, I play God. So I'm able to I sort of snap my fingers and bring someone to life and snap my fingers again. And so
you're
in
like
my
Q.
scene, I'm like Q. I am. Oh my God. No one's ever made that reference or that parallel, that analogy.
You got to play Q.
I got to play Q. And in my scene, it was with Jeremy Sisto, who, if you remember, he was in Clueless way back when. So Jeremy Sisto was in that scene. And Jeremy Sisto is with his, I don't know if it was his friend, his brother or something. And his brother has died in the movie. And I come in as God and I snap my fingers and his brother is magically alive again. But then Jeremy Sisto is kind of rude and I snap it again and his brother dies. And it just sort of like I'm Q back and forth. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's funny.
It was a cool little film that I worked on. I got to work with, they had a pretty substantial cast in this little independent film, including Jeremy Sisto. Armin Shimerman was in it. I didn't have any scenes with Armin, but I did. I think I might have, if I didn't have a scene with Natasha Lyonne, she was definitely there the day that I was filming.
Oh, and Natasha Lyonne is in Orange is the New Black with Kate Mulgrew.
With Kate Mulgrew,
I love small worlds like this. That's very cool.
So there you go. That was Auteur Theory.
Auteur Theory, 1999. Mm-hmm. Wow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You made a movie about a film festival a year before I made my short that you went to a film festival with me that next year. You went to the Slam Dance Film Festival.
Yeah, to support 9mm of Love.
Ethan Phillips is in it. It's a short that I made on the Paramount backlot right around the time you made The Auteur Theory, probably. Mm-hmm. John Campbell, who was the head of facilities. I love John. He was awesome. At the time, I was smoking occasionally. At work, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I would go smoke a cigarette out by the hair makeup trailer. That was kind of a good designated spot.
Yeah.
And John Campbell was also a smoker. And
that's how you guys start talking from a smoke break? Oh, that's hilarious.
And we became lifelong friends. I still talk to John Campbell, the head of Paramount Facilities. He was there for 30 years.
I love it.
I think I met John Campbell in the same spot where I first met you, right outside of the hair makeup trailer.
No way. That's so
probably
funny.
The same spot.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So did you show John 9mm of Love? Did he see it then?
I thanked him in the credits and
he came to the screening.
Yeah. John generously made it happen that I could shoot on the Paramount backlot, the New York streets, for 2 days, a Saturday and a Sunday, for free. I didn't pay a dime.
You didn't pay a
That backlot, I would guess for a daily rental is probably $25,000 a day.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're talking like six figures to rent that, right?
Oh, would have been, $25,000 to $50,000 a day.
Five figures, 20,000. Okay, yeah. five yeah, years.
It would have been a lot of money. And I got it for free. I couldn't have made the movie without
so
it.
So amazing. Yeah. And the whole experience with the Slam Dance people, the organizers, they were great. I mean, the programming was good. Everything was running very smoothly.
Yeah.
They put on a good film festival for sure.
So Slam Dance had an amazing season that year. In fact, there's a couple of filmmakers that went on to big things that had their first films there. Olivia Wilde had a short film.
Which one was hers?
Directed. I can't remember, but I remember going to see the screening.
Same time as your season?
Slam Dance. Yeah,
what?
The same year.
Well, then I went with you, right?
You probably did.
I must have.
Can't remember the name of it, but it was her first. It was like an experimental little short that she had directed.
Okay.
And that was around 2000. So, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Where are we?
Okay. This week's episode is... Workforce.
Yes.
Workforce Part One.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to, yes, we're going to go watch it. We are going to remember what we can remember.
Yeah.
We'll come back and talk to everybody about it shortly.
Sounds good.
For all our Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material.
We're back from watching Workforce Part One. And right off the bat, can I just ask you a question? Because
yes.
You remember the episode where the Hirogen took over our ship and used it as a training ground. And
yes.
The majority of our main players were all under the influence of a little chip or something that they didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
So you did not like that episode because of that reason and that reason alone. You said, this is not my favorite episode because our guys don't even know who they are. Do you also feel that way in watching this episode?
No,
I don't.
I remembered like the whole factory set. I remembered, didn't remember that I was a waiter. I didn't remember any of that story. I think I remembered more because, like I said, Craker and Roxanne were talking about so many of the production elements of this that I remember that stuck with me more than my story.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Because it was a very different episode. But I got to say, back to your first question, this episode's one of my favorites so far.
Wow.
Of all seven seasons.
I'm just going to say that, you know, in your closet, you have two Tom Paris uniforms.
Yes.
Which are great, but I really think you should have tried to go for that vest that you
wore
as a waiter. That funky, it was almost like spiky.
A jacket vest. It was
but it had crazy texture on there, which I thought, hey, that's what you should have taken.
Speaking of having things from the show, I found
it's like that. That's okay. It looks cool like that. I like that.
Well, I found my script from the episode because the pages are folded back.
Oh yeah,
for my scenes, and there's coffee stains and all kinds of things.
We know that's the real deal.
Yeah, see, like there's a folded back page there.
Yeah, but where's the revisions, though?
Were there any revisions? Maybe there weren't. This says final draft, and this is the one with my scenes folded over, so I feel like this is the one.
I think it's
bent here, and I found a pristine copy. There it is.
Yeah,
I found a pristine copy, and I found
that copy.
That's
the copy that you took on set with you to look at for lines. Like, we didn't have little tiny sides back then.
No, we didn't have sides. But anyway, I found both of these scripts.
Very cool.
I think I'm going to throw them up on the store because these things have been gathering dust. So I'm going to throw it up on the store. Workforce Part One, found my script, found another one. But back to your question, this episode is one of my favorites. The premise is so interesting to me. Yes, our personalities have been changed a bit, or our memories have been changed. But we are ourselves. We're not playing characters. We're playing
Tom
Paris Catherine Janeway. And we just don't have any memory.
Okay. We are still authentic versions of ourselves. We just don't have any memory of our prior lives.
Yeah. Right? And Tuvok, with his Vulcan blood, I guess, can resist it enough that he gets little snippets of, he can get
through the veil of whatever type of therapy that they were giving or whatever. Was it
an
injection? It was an injection of
it something. Had to be a combo package of an injection.
Yes.
And there's that drill thing and the headpiece.
Yeah.
But anyway,
the combo. Would you like the combo package?
It's the combo. Yeah.
Let's start with our synopsis.
Poetry
synopsis.
Do
because yeah, we digress because we're so excited about this episode, I guess.
Yes.
All right, here we go. My haiku for workforce part one. Memories suppressed. F.O. Neelix Kim. Okay. Doc likes to wear red.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. You covered a lot of detail.
Thank you.
There.
All right, let's hear this limerick.
Here's the limerick for Workforce, part one.
Hmm.
Alien mind control allows Janeway to relax and unwind. Even here, Tom and B'Elanna's hearts are intertwined. Tuvok's memory returns. Janeway and Jaffin's love burns. Chakotay and Neelix must work to break the spellbind.
Oh, very nice. Let me ask you a question. Can you substitute for, instead of intertwined, and entwined? Would that
could?
Yeah,
you could.
Does it flow easier if you said are entwined?
Are entwined? Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Poetry is, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder. Really,
it really is. It is. Okay.
You hear what you want, and the rhythms and the poetry just speaks to you in your own personal way.
Yeah. I try to have a little economy of syllables, so that's why I went from intertwined to entwined. Just one off.
Even here,
out.
Tom and B'Elanna's hearts are entwined. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah. See.
It's nice.
Okay.
It's nice.
I just want to help out for our official poetry and our haiku and limerick book that we have at the end that we publish.
Yes.
I just want this to be as tight as possible.
Did you know I love poetry? I'm a big poetry fan.
We both like poetry.
Yes.
Yeah. We should send texts to each other in haiku.
We should only communicate. That. We should do a whole podcast just speak in haiku.
That's it. All right. So, hey, we were both right on writer. You had guessed Biller, and I had guessed Brian Fuller. And it said Biller and Fuller on the credits. So we got that right.
I can't believe Brandon Braga is not. I could have sworn he was in this.
Yeah.
He was,
didn't you say Biller at the end, though? You did.
I said, I think it was. I thought it was going to be
Braga and Biller. Yes. And I said, no, I'm going to go with, you know, Fuller.
Fuller.
So that was right. It was Fuller and Fuller Biller. Biller Fuller. See, that works out. Their names could be a haiku. And then the director, you were correct. It was.
I was pretty confident on that one.
Yes, Mr. Kroger.
My memory sometimes does not fail me. You know what I didn't remember until I started watching it, and then I vividly remembered, was you said something about, we were talking about my short film that got shot on the back lot. You said, I think some of this was on the back lot.
Yeah.
I didn't remember any of that.
Was I right?
Before, but yes.
Am I right? I am right.
So much of that was shot on the back lot.
Thank you. Okay.
And I remember some specific setups and the way they used the part of the back lot that is not intended for filming. They used
Awesome.
They used the staircases and the backs of the facades.
Right. And also of, they used the parts of whatever for the AC units and the, you know what I'm saying?
So that you're
the
exactly
nuts and
right.
Bolts there's and the a, pipes and everything. Of
there's a facility that does all the heating and air conditioning units.
Yes.
And they're behind the tank where we used to park. There's a tank that they would fill with water.
Yeah.
A giant sky blue giant. It's the biggest tank in Hollywood.
But it was multi-leveled though in the back of that blue tank with the stairs and everything. That's what they used. That was Oh my gosh.
They have stairs that you would go up the backside of that sky facade.
Yes.
And the stairs, they could drop lights or different things. That's why it was all metallic and it was made for the weather and wind and all that. So it was very solid. Well, here, if you're looking on video, there is a blue tank.
Yes. You can see the lines for the parking. Yep.
That's where we parked. Right. You and I both parked in the blue tank.
That's right.
Unless there was a film going on. Then they would fill that with water.
Right. It looks like a drive-in movie theater screen is what it is. That massive screen there. And they would use that as the backdrop to, you would film. Yes. They put sky on that little wall. And it's the back of that wall is the facility of the.
And look, see, there's some stairs.
Yeah, you can see some stairs right there. Yes. See? Yes.
That's where they filmed.
Good call.
Wow.
Man. Yeah. Good call. Okay. Let's go through some guest stars right now. So we have James Reed, who played Jaffin.
Loved him, very charming.
Yes, aka Janeway's dude in this episode. Mm-hmm. His very first credit is a 1982 episode of the popular sitcom Cheers.
Oh, wow.
which was one of my very first, because I did 3 days of
82.
82.
So this Cheers is, start. Oh yeah, Cheers did start around 82.
I think that was the first year. That's what I'm thinking. I did extra work on Cheers. In order to get your SAG card at the time, you had to do 3 days of union extra work. My friend's uncle was in charge of Cenex and Central Casting. So I was able to get 3 days of union extra work. One was on Cheers. So this is in 1994, 93 that I did this. Cheers, Sequest DSV, and a Michael Jackson music video. So So Cheers is, I think, one of the very first thing sets that I had worked on. And Jaffin, the actor James Reed, who played Jaffin, also worked on Cheers for his first credit.
I have another connection to Cheers, 1982.
You do.
I had just moved to New York, 1982.
Okay.
And I got my equity, my actor's equity card,
stage union,
as a understudy in an off-Broadway musical called Preppies. And the reason that show got produced in New York was because the composers had written this song.
Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
That's the Cheers theme song.
Oh, they wrote that.
I got my my first professional union card as an understudy in Preppies, the off-Broadway musical that was written by them.
Wow. So these composers also wrote Preppies the musical.
Yes.
Is that their only musical, or they wrote multiple musicals?
Boy, I don't know. But everybody, because they had won like Grammys and Emmys for the theme song. It was a bit very popular. It was on the radio, that theme song for Cheers.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that was so everyone knew that song. Everyone. Everybody knows your name. Everyone knew that song is pretty much. Yeah. Mm, that's great.
Cool. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
Who's next?
Cheers. Don Most, aka, well, when he was younger, he was known as Donnie Most. But then as he became an adult, he cut off the NY and just went with Don Most. We all know him from Happy Days as Ralph Mouth. And yes, he played Caden.
Yes, I remember meeting him in the trailer. I didn't have
Scene,
but I remember meeting him and talking about Happy Days in the makeup trailer.
Oh, right.
It was over by Tina, my makeup artist's table, and I come in for a scene, and he was getting ready to go shoot, and I was getting ready to get ready.
Yeah.
And he was in there, and I was with Don Most. I talked about Anson Williams directing. We talked about that and their friendship. Yeah. So it was fun having him on there.
Yeah, he was a nice guy. His very first credit, 1973 episode of the television show Emergency.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
1973. And at that time, he was credited as Donnie Most, not Don Most. Yep. Next up, we have John Aniston, the father of, you know who, Jennifer Aniston. John Aniston is Jennifer Aniston's father, who played the Quarren ambassador. He's the one that's on the view screen sort of telling Janeway that, yes, I've talked to your supposed crew members, but they don't even know who you are, right? 1962, an episode of a TV series called 87th Precinct, where he played Officer Number One. That was his very, very first credit. And I find it interesting as we have a similar, I mean, not similar, but my very first credit was All-American Girl, where I played Handsome Korean Man, Number Three. Not Number One, but I'm Number Three.
That's funny.
I'm just saying, most actors have a number something in their early.
Do you remember John Aniston being on set? Because I remember him. I remember him when he filmed, and I remember saying something about his daughter because Friends was huge. It was the air at the same time. And I said, oh, your daughter is on Friends. She's awesome. I said, I had done a movie with Courtney Cox. And so we had one brief conversation. He was a very nice guy.
All right. We also have some co-stars. We have Iona Morris, who is, guess what? Bill Morris's sister. So
yes, playing the owner of the bar that
Molly, who your boss. Yeah. And Iona Morris, of course, Greg Morris's daughter from Mission Impossible, Phil Morris's sister. Iona Morris's very first credit is the 1966 episode of the original series Star Trek.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, where her brother was in it too. It was the episode with all the kids. And we have Tom Virtue as the supervisor. He's the one that we see in the very early scenes of this episode with
Janeway.
He's
done a million shows.
He's done a gabillion shows. His very first credit is a 1982 episode of King's Crossing, I don't know if you remember that show, King's Crossing.
Was it a miniseries or what was
it? I don't know. It just looks like a TV series from the 80s. But we also know him from our show. He played Lieutenant Baxter in season one, Eye of the Needle episode, and season two episode Twisted. So he's been in two prior episodes as a human Starfleet officer. Here he's an alien with not much prosthetics, so you can still tell it's him.
Yeah.
But still, Tom Virtue is the supervisor. We have,
he's great.
Mm-hmm. I could not find any credit or any listing for Michael Behrens, though, the coyote. So I couldn't find that. Same thing with Matt Williamson, security officer number two. Akemi Royer did show up, medtech. That's the one sort of saying to Tuvok in the beginning, hey, it's okay, these inoculations are meant for you. 1997 film Hang Your Dog in the Wind is Akemi Royer's first credit. We also have Robert Mamana, security officer number one. He's the one that walks up and says, hey, it's curfew. Yeah. It's about over. Watch out, that guy. 1989 episode of Hey Dude, TV show called Hey Dude. Have you heard of a TV show called Hey Dude?
No, but okay. I would watch it. Sounds great.
Yeah. So there we go. That's all our players. Yeah.
Big cast, big show. Let's dive in.
Go.
Let's dive in. Okay, so the first thing we see is this wide planet shot of this industrial kind of, you know, planet surface. Very cool
CGI. You
opening
like it?
Shot.
You like
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Beautiful. We pan across, a train is coming by, and we see people walking downstairs, and we cut in, we see it's Janeway coming down the stairs with a bunch of workers.
Yes.
All different races or species of aliens. We do see a bunch of our regular background in coming down the stairs.
We do.
So at first I'm like, oh, we've made friends with these people because a bunch of our crew is there with Janeway. And by the way, coming down the stairs, by the way, is the back of the tank. It's those stairs. I immediately was like, oh, yes.
I love it. Just to go back a little bit on that establishing shot showing the city, I love the waterways. It looked like a modern day Venice sort of with all the water, that big sort of river in the middle. So that was cool.
Very cool. Janeway goes down these stairs. She goes off camera and we find her getting on this like elevator.
So cool.
Shot. Now I got to say that
talk about this.
Very hard to do because most likely I would put a lot of money on it. I would bet. They had a very small set. They probably had a platform that represented the elevator floor. And then they had some kind of gangway that they stepped off of onto this thing. It never moved in real life. Okay. They had to shoot overhead and the camera was kind of moving what you would call parallaxing. So the backgrounds are shifting as the camera moved over. Very complicated, especially for that time. Vis effect shot to have all of these shifting angles as the elevator goes down and then they got off, which became digital people at that point because you see them walking.
Well, very expensive. Okay.
Shot.
So it goes from real to digital person at the bottom of the lift.
When they're tiny,
when they're teensy.
When you see Janeway disappear at the bottom, she probably was on one set that never moved. They just moved the camera overhead.
Right.
And then they shrunk it down digitally. Yeah. And then when she stepped off, they converted her body into a digital person because she kept walking. I would love to hear a VisFX person describe what they shot because I bet it was very little.
Yeah.
All of that was created virtually. So
it still looked great though. It was super
amazing.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Looked very cool. We go inside the plant. We see Janeway close. We kind of linger on her now. I made a note here that her hair is fluffier than I've ever seen it.
He just went to the salon.
Oh my gosh.
Clearly.
Yes.
You like that wardrobe? Very smart looking, that sort of blue.
Yeah, it looked great.
V-neck thing.
It was very flattering on her, the color, the cut of it. It was great. Yeah, but she's working. She's looking for the supervisor, and a worker points her over to a supervisor. And she goes in and she says she's reporting. And the supervisor looks at her authorization and license and sees that she's got a level 6 thermodynamic authorization. He's very impressed.
She should have said, for some reason, I want to call you Baxter. I don't know why, but I just have that feeling.
Okay, exactly. you know, he's very excited to have a new worker, and she apologizes for being late. And I love the energy that Tate had in this scene. It was almost like young girl.
You know what? It was almost like it was almost like a load was taken off her back. You know what I'm saying? Yes. It's like the weight of the world was gone. She was so effervescent and sort of just happy-go-lucky and just
smiling all the time.
Smiling and just, yes, it was
excited to work.
Very lighthearted and
yes,
I loved it. It was fun to see that.
Yeah, it was great. Anyway, he sets her up and she's ready to start working. She takes a look around and I think we go to credits at this point. She's very smiley. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, she's working away. The place is popping here. And there's this great Steadicam shot of her bouncing from one console to the other. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, these consoles, they had those, you know, those classic, like almost from the 20s or 30s, static circles with the static electricity going out from the center. It looked very old school.
You would buy that from a place called Spencer's mall, basically. It's like a round disc and it has a little thing that comes out.
It's just static, you know, low static electricity going out in a circle. And they had a ton of those on all of these consoles, which...
Well, the Borg regeneration unit has one of those, except in green.
We've seen those a million times.
They could have found something other than that, for sure. Yeah. Right?
Yes. Yeah. She's got her specification. She looks at a pad, but it doesn't look like our pad. It looks like some kind of
alien pad,
different shapes. Yes. Almost in like hexagonal shapes or something. Mm-hmm. And then she starts working and an alarm goes off and suddenly a mysterious stranger appears.
That's after she tries to turn it off and she can't. She's talking to the console. She's like, please.
Oh, which I love.
Please don't do this to me.
I love that they wrote in. It was the first thing because I noticed it. She's talking to it like she's on the ship.
Yeah.
You know, because we talk to the computer all the time.
Right.
But on this planet, people don't talk to computers. You got to hit buttons. She starts talking and he sort of makes a joke about it.
Yeah. Well, you see finger first because he stops. He pushes the right button. Right. That's how you that's the reveal. It's the reveal of his finger first. Then he makes a joke about it. Yeah.
Yeah. About talking to the computer, which that was my first instinct of like. She's got a little Janeway in her because she's doing this instinctually, even though it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Which I love in this whole episode, even though, yes, we've lost our memories. There's a piece of us that's the real Janeway, the real Paris, the real Alana, the real Tuvok.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I mean, she's only been there for what, 5 minutes? And she's already got some guy banging on her door right there, trying to be the suitor, Mr. Jaffin.
And then suddenly Seven appears and... Seven shows up. Speaking of, she's got bangs.
She does.
Seven has bangs. Bad look. Bad look. I give it a thumbs down.
Really? I thought it was all right. It didn't bother me that much. You're poo-pooing it?
I'm poo-pooing the bangs on Seven. My goodness. I felt like it was just... because they should have let her hair go all the way down or something very different. It was like basically.
But then that would have been Seven, like Kate, though. That would have been Janeway with the hair all the way down. They have to separate the two.
And I guess she's a really uptight. She's like the supervisor or something here.
So that was more uptight supervisor hair, correct?
I guess so. But the bangs didn't work for me. She's obviously the supervisor and she's basically says no fraternizing, no flirting.
Yeah. You don't need two people with this console. This is a one person console. And it's funny because even her true nature is coming out in this other reality, right?
Because Jaffin asks her, you know, what's your name? And she says, Annika Hansen. She uses her real name, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. She doesn't use Seven of Nine, her real name.
No,
she is the efficiency monitor, we learn. Jaffin and Janeway sort of try to wrap up their flirting. And one thing occurred to me at this moment. I was like, I paused it. I looked on their costumes. There's no Starfleet combat badge.
Yes.
And I thought, wait, how are they speaking to all these aliens? They don't have a universal translator.
Well, hold on. Let me see if I can debunk this. Well, from what I can understand, I think you can, if you have some type of broadband, some type of broadband, a universal translator.
I have two. I have two debunks. I have two ways to debunk it. Either this alien species has a universal translator because they've got so many foreign workers here. They've got to have their own version. So maybe they've got one somehow
that's wireless and you don't have to have
wireless. We don't see it. Either that, or when they're brainwashed, they're somehow implanted with an understanding of their universal language that they all use there.
Interesting.
But then, yeah, I don't know. But
a bit of a hole in the script.
Well, it's just it's a Star Trek conceit, this universal translator conceit that can be problematic sometimes. And I'm sure there's been other times where it could have been a question. But for some reason, this scene, I suddenly went, wait, these are all people from all over the place, and we don't have our comm badges to be able to understand them. Mm-hmm. We're not on our ship. We're not, right. You know.
Yeah. Good call, though. But,
yeah. Anyway.
I like that. We're at the bar, I think.
Yes, we are.
Now we see Tom Paris. Tom Paris, who's been fired from his prior job, is looking for another job.
And I vaguely, as I watched this, vaguely remembered any of this story.
Really?
I do remember, you know, filming with the actress. What's her name again?
Iona Morris. Did you talk to her? You must have talked to her.
Yes, I remember. I did. All of a sudden, I was like, I don't remember much of this, but I remember having some conversations with her about her brother.
Yes.
And, you know, other stuff, just like actors do. Like, what else have you been on? And you know,
Right.
Talking shop.
Right. And the alien race that she's a part of, doesn't it remind you of the aliens from Ex Post Facto?
Oh, that
early episode, the bird people. Yeah, because she had feathers up in her hair too. It was the same type of hairstyle. So I thought it was
those same aliens.
These are those aliens. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
The memory murder thing that Paris had to go through. Remember? Okay. Anyway, so you did, once you saw her, you realized, oh my gosh, I was a waiter. And oh my gosh, I did talk to Iona Morris.
I did slowly remember some of this. And I do remember doing this story that back then I thought, oh, this is ironic because I was a cocktail waiter in New York City. I worked at a restaurant called Ernie's on the Upper West Side, which was one of the hottest restaurants in New York back in the 80s. And I did serve food some, but I was much better at the bar.
Cocktail.
I worked a bar in the cocktail lounge because people, there were, you know, people waiting for tables, you know, 50, 100 people always. It was like Studio 54 back in the 80s, Ernie's restaurant.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. A lot of show busy people came out of that crew because it was a big staff there.
But. So the minute you saw this scene, it made you think of Ernie's.
It made me think that when we were shooting this, I remember carrying around the cocktail tray and everything. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm back to this. I remember doing this. I had such, In fact, there's a shot in one of these scenes where I'm coming through the bar with a cocktail tray.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that looks good. I got good. You did a good.
Yeah, no, man. You did not look awkward at all. So
no, I spent many days and weeks and months with one of those.
I wish there was a time machine. If there was, I would go back to Ernie's and I'd walk up to you. I'm like, hello, Robert Duncan McNeil. You're like, how do you know me? You don't know me, but I'm from the future. This job right here will prepare you for the time that you will actually play a waiter on a sci-fi show in 1995 that you will book.
And then it's funny that Ernie's, my job as a waiter, just in the year or so, right around the same time that I got my job there.
Yeah.
So the whole crew at Ernie's used to go after the restaurant shut down around 2 a.m, we'd go to a bar around the corner called Cafe Central and drink, because that was open till 4.
Right.
So after your shift, you'd kind of wind down, you'd go have a drink and the bartender there was named Bruce Willis.
No.
Yes. And while just as I got the job back in 82 or so, 82, 83, that bartender had gotten a job
called Moonlighting.
And everybody was like, Bruce, the bartender, got a TV show.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
anyway, I digress into
Bruce, the bartender booked. I love. Don't Bruce even. Don't bartender. Apologize for digressing. I think this is absolutely informative and entertaining to know about this. I didn't know.
That's why this whole story was so comfortable for me, because I was like, oh yeah, I've been in restaurants and bars.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Paris comes in. He's kind of a little like old Paris, his attitude. And at first when I saw it, I was like, oh no, he's going to, they're going to take him back and write him like that. But clearly they didn't. It's a little bit of the old Paris, but I think you can see that he's changed and grown.
Yeah.
And I love that outfit. I remember being very comfortable in that outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So comfortable.
It looked comfy.
But he needs a job. Umali, you know, sort of reluctantly gives him a job. He talks his way into it.
I do like the dialogue here, though. Just jumping back and forth, you know, you're like, because you're trying to play coy. You're like, it's a long story. And she's like, I like a long story. It just goes back and forth. And yeah. I just think, the whole thing is where you say, look, you won't regret this. And she's like, oh, I'm certain I will. So yeah. I thought it was really good writing. So I'm going to say that this was Brian Fuller right here.
Yeah, it's very well done. We go from him begging for a job to in the same spot later that evening. The place is filled with workers.
Jaffin's there talking about some joke that he's making. Isn't that what this happens, right?
Yes, Jaffin's talking. And Tuvok over at the bar, Tuvok sitting at the bar.
Oh my God.
Starts laughing awkwardly, so hysterically.
So awkward that I thought that this is sort of the behavior that someone who is unhinged and about to murder somebody, like he's gonna kill you after he or shiv you or something, you know. It's like, what's
he was
happening?
A little manic, and it's smiling so much, explaining humor and why humor is so funny, that, you know, irony is the source of all humor or something like that.
Oh my God.
And Jaffin is like, when you explain it, it's not funny.
It's not funny any longer. Yeah. Because his Vulcan ways are coming into play here. And it is a funny scene to see him smiling that much. It's so disconcerting, because you're so used to Tuvok not having any type of emotion or any smile on his face. And here he is beaming.
This is hilarious. The awkward Vulcan.
Very awkward.
With feelings smiling was hilarious.
They refer back to this scene later too, you know, because Jaffin talks about that Tuvok, horrible joke teller, you know, is what he said.
Yes.
Really good.
Janeway shows up. She says, well, Jaffin thinks that he's come to hang out with him maybe, but she goes, no, I've got to study these manuals.
And she's there to get something to eat. That's it. Not to hang out with Jaffin.
So they have another moment, but she's a little... she's a little standoffish with him. And then Paris gives away some drinks to a couple of people.
Oh my God.
Compliments of the proprietress. And Umali comes over and like, hey, we don't give away drinks here.
Yeah.
So you can see that Tom he's friendly. He's trying to do nice things. He's not the old guy, which I, again,
love. But you did get scolded by the proprietress. It did happen.
I did.
But at this point, we do have a pregnant B'Elanna that walks in, looks around, and walks out. What was that moment? What was she looking at that made her say, was it just because it was too busy and she was like, I don't want to deal with this, I'm out of here?
Well, I think it's a little bit of she's pregnant.
Yeah.
We'll get to, you know, why she's feeling alone and isolated later in the story. But in that moment, it's a little bit of... B'Elanna's old, I don't fit in with anybody vibes.
So that's
what I loved about this whole premise, is it allowed all these characters to kind of, you know, retain their fundamental, you know, nature. and mm-hmm. yet play it in a different way, in a much looser way, I think.
Okay.
We're back, I think, after B'Elanna takes a sad moment, looks around and leaves. We're back on, I think, the stairway here.
Yeah, this is a sort of a walk and talk outside with Janeway and Jaffin. And they're walking they're walking out of the facility, and then they're now in an alleyway. And this is when the two officers come up and say, "Hey, it's almost curfew." This was that scene,
basically. And we learn that they live in the same building.
The same building, yeah.
Yes, same worker housing building.
Which looked like it was one single narrow building that with, you know, using CGI, they just sort of duplicated it and pulled it further out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It had all these multiple segments to it, which I thought was, maybe that already exists as
it is. But it was nice, this alley set. And I remember Craker and Roxanne talking about this.
Yeah.
That they had to shoot this entire giant planet on the back lot in a tiny little behind the facade. Like mm-hmm. they didn't have much set there.
No.
And they were having to be very creative about how the different angles and where people came from. And I thought they did a great job. It felt huge to me. And I know it wasn't. It was not that big.
Yeah. So that's nighttime, right? When they have this walk and talk. And then basically they say goodnight. Janeway is like, "Look, I'm busy." She kind of turns down his offer. He wants to hang out with her longer, right? So they go to bed. There's an exterior shot, not together, but separately. There is an exterior shot of the factory. Did you like that CGI? Did you like that shot of that factory? Yeah. I thought that looked good. Yeah.
Great.
We then cut to where inside the factory.
She's back at work.
She's back at work again. Next day, it's same thing, 9 to 5. Alarm goes off again, but this time it's inoculation time. It's not a bad thing, but it's not.
Well, I love, by the way, when the alarm goes off, she pops up, her head pops up from behind the console.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah.
It's just adorable. I found her performance really adorable in this.
Yeah. Very charming. I agree.
A few moments later, they're still in that warehouse, but they're lined up to get their shots.
Yeah.
And I love terrified Tuvok. It's so funny. He's afraid of needles. This Vulcan who never shows emotion. And at this point, I thought, it's just a funny, you know, angle on Tuvok being afraid of something in an unusual way.
Right.
But we start to realize that
there's something more here.
Mm-hmm. There's a little more as he tries to get out of getting the shot. They start to give him an injection, and he has a flashback where we see he's in a Starfleet uniform. He's being restrained and he's got blisters or wounds or something on his face.
Right.
And then he comes out of the flashback and they say, "You're good. We're done. All good. Go back to work." And he runs away to a console, and that's the end of that. But
that's the end of that. Interesting.
The flashback tells us we're going to learn how they got here.
Oh, yeah. Foreshadowing, and that's not a good story. We have an exterior space shot. We have the Delta Flyer flying through space, and we have the first officer's log. We have Chakotay talking about what is going on, and evidently it was... See, Chakotay, Kim, and Neelix, they are returning to Voyager after 5 days of trading with the Nar Shaddan. I don't know who the Nar Shaddan are.
No idea.
Never mentioned them before, but that's fine. Nar Shaddan. Kim is not in good shape.
Yeah, we cut inside the flyer to the back, and Harry's lying on the bed.
Yeah,
I laughed immediately.
Did you?
I thought this whole scene was very funny.
Yeah.
You're... having drank something that gave you an upset stomach.
Right.
And then the more you learn, the sicker you feel. You learn
Well, Neelix says you shouldn't have drank the Fala nectar. And when you hear the term nectar, you usually think it's made of
fruit.
Yeah. Tangerine, orange, whatever. Yeah. It's a fruit nectar. But later we learn in the scene, it's a meat nectar. It was basically pureed meat bripe. And it's not just meat, it's meat byproduct. So that means all the undesirable pieces of whatever the animal it came from, that is the byproduct. Yeah.
It sounds disgusting. And by the way, Neelix says something in the scene. He says, "Commander Chakotay is a vegetarian. He couldn't drink it."
Yeah.
And I was like, record scratch. Wait a minute. Chakotay's a vegetarian?
They've mentioned that before.
Didn't he have roast in Janeway's quarters? I don't think we've always played him vegetarian.
Maybe he
changed. She burned the roast. They were going to have roast for dinner.
I mean, you're right. Unless it was a plant-based roast. It's possible.
Nah, I feel like that's a detail that we have played fast and loose.
Well, but anyway. Okay. Well, there's another fast and loose moment in here. Basically, Neelix comes over and says, hey, take a sip of this. It's Leela Bark tea. And Harry takes a whiff of that. And he's like, no, I can't take this. So what's missing here is I think Kim has actually said in the past that he likes Leela Root. Like he likes the Leela Root stew.
Yes.
So I feel like this was inconsistent. I thought, okay, so now Harry's like,
They make food jokes in this show a lot, and there's no consistency to it.
No.
Like, at one sometimes point, Neelix is a great cook. Sometimes he's a horrible cook.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, Janeway's a great cook. Sometimes she's a horrible cook. Chakotay calls Harry and Neelix, I need you up here on our way. And we go up front, and Chakotay says, we're at the rendezvous coordinates, but no Voyager. I'm scanning, can't find the ship.
Yeah,
and Harry finishes that scene with, "Oh well, so much for my bed,
my own bed." Yeah, he wanted to sleep in his own bed.
Very funny. I thought you did a great job of
playing
the poor tummy sick guy. You made me laugh. Made me laugh. We go to a space shot, and there's Voyager floating in some kind of nebula or gas or something.
Yes,
it was very cool.
Yeah.
That was a cool shot.
It was.
Then we go to engineering and the place looks destroyed. We see the doctor crawling underneath things and he's got on a command uniform.
He's got command, which is a little, huh? Okay.
Yeah, very strange.
Very much so.
I love when engineering gets this way with all the smoke and the flashing stuff. It just, our set looks great when it's being destroyed.
Yes.
Really the doctor's trying to reestablish the subspace transponder, just all the systems. He's trying to.
Everything's broken. Yeah.
Everything's broken. And suddenly the computer says, intruder alert.
Mm-hmm.
Doc says, where? On the bridge, two humanoids. And the computer's not fixed enough to know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sensor resolution is below 20%. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
The doctor's going to have to go to the bridge and see what's up. I love him sneaking on the bridge. Very funny.
Yeah.
And then he's got a Sims beacon on his wrist, which is named after Alan Sims, prop master.
Yeah.
He turns that flashlight off to a corner and there is Harry and Chakotay in the full space suit. Do you remember shooting that? You do?
Yeah. No, shooting that scene? No, no. That's rare that we're on the full spacesuit on the bridge. That's very rare, right?
Yeah. You don't remember getting in that suit?
I don't remember getting in the suit. I don't. I remember how snarky Kim and the doctor get towards each other in this episode. Yes. I remember that. But the actual suit on the bridge part? No, I don't recall that.
Wow. Well, you're on the spacesuits. I wore the same thing in, is it Gravity? The episode with Tom.
Yeah. And we've already talked about how uncomfortable those suits are.
So
I think it's a memory that I suppressed on purpose because it was so horrible. I just, we were
very claustrophobic in that same suit.
And we should have got a space
fan.
Suit. Yeah.
Do you remember? I don't know if you remember this, but it's got a fan. So
you're hearing
this like buzzing sound. You can't hear anybody.
Yep. Nope.
Then
you start talking your lines and you start screaming them, which really shouldn't be that high. So it's awkward and it's uncomfortable. That's the basic
but it looks cool
message. It looks great. That's all they care about. Does it look good? Are the actors suffering?
Mm-hmm.
so be it.
They ask what's up. The doctor begins to explain that after they left on their mission, things started to go wrong.
Well, they hit a mine. Isn't that what they said? They hit a mine. And then all this radiation started to permeate the ship. They couldn't vent it. People were getting sick. Janeway says that they had to basically jump into escape pods and get to a habitable planet that doesn't have radiation.
The captain activates the emergency command hologram.
Okay, let's just stop right here. I thought that was from the episode where the doctor has all these crazy delusions of grandeur, Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy, or one of those things, where he made up.
He did, but it's still in
to
the
fool
computer
the aliens.
Memory.
Right.
Yes.
But my point being, like, that was not for him to actually be the command, like in command of the ship. I mean, it was to fool the aliens, you know?
Yes.
And then Janeway said something to the effect of, like, what does she say? She says, oh, you wanted this chance for a long time. Now you've got it. So it's like the doctor has been wanting to be the captain for a long time.
Well, I wanted to be like in the action. That's why he created that program, right? So
I guess
she's in this situation kind of going, all right, we're screwed. Somebody's got to take care of the ship. Use your program you created. And
okay. All right. Well, then I'll buy that. I'll buy that.
It's not an official Starfleet emergency command hologram is not a thing.
Right.
It's only a thing because he created it.
Because he created it, but it was created under the behest of the captain for a prior episode in order to fool the aliens. Remember that? Like that we were dealing with, I think Oh, it was the big overseer guys that were watching us. Remember that? That you like those aliens? So, yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's why I was confused. I was like, wait a minute. Did they not recall that this was a made-up thing and not a real thing?
I think they did, but she's like, what am I going to do? Somebody's got to watch the ship while we're gone. So
it's just the way she delivered the lines. It was so official. Like, this was the deal. Like, this was his sub-program from the beginning, but this is not. No. This was written in. Yeah.
No. Okay. It's experimental.
Yes.
We cut out to space, and I love the escape pod shot. All those ships coming off.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Still in a flashback, but we're on the bridge again. He's trying to assess the damage when suddenly another vessel shows up, locks on a tractor beam. And I got to say, he basically tries to negotiate, and then he starts firing at the ship. He's a one-man crew. I wrote, he does it all. Well, he's a one-man crew. He evades this ship with a tractor beam.
Yeah.
He takes out their engines.
You know, the logic is the alien says, well, no, you're a hologram. Well, the humans, the live beings they've abandoned the ship. So clearly they don't want the ship anymore. It's mine. But what I found interesting is that when he starts firing on Coyote, he basically fires, and this vessel has no shields whatsoever. Do you remember that? Like, he takes out the targeting thing, he takes out their engine, like there was
Boom. They're really bad, or he's really good,
bad. Yeah, but what aliens are shieldless? What aliens have we
I wonder if that are they're shieldless? All part of the scam that will lay these mines. When they hit a mine, they're going to have to abandon ship, and then you can salvage these things with nobody there. So
he doesn't need a shield. Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to expect any resistance. It was a little easy. I agree. The whole thing was a bit easy.
Very easy.
Very easy. Now we're back in normal time where the doctor finishes his story. He talks about evading two other ships, hiding inside that nebula that I thought was such a cool shot.
Yeah. Well, Harry does ask about what about the rest of the crew, and doctor says not a word. No idea.
And by the way, this scene at the end of his story is one shot. It is an amazing Alan Craker oneer that goes on for probably a page or something, which
nice.
Usually you'd have all kinds of shots in here, but he's got one shot that moves around with the blocking. If anybody ever wants to be a director, watch Alan Craker episodes. It is a masterclass in beautiful staging and shot design. He did a great job.
So it was an Alan special.
It was an Alan special.
Okay. We have a flashback of when Janeway and company first arrive on the planet, the Quarren planet, basically, and they're being treated for their radiation poisoning. Janeway is just delirious. She's like, wait, who are you? He's like, oh, my name is Dr. Kaden. And this is, of course,
Don Most.
Good old Don Most. Yeah. Janeway's concerned about her crew. And he's like, oh, everyone's being treated and everything's fine. Don't worry. Tuvok's in the background. He's like, wait, what's that medication? And he's concerned about Janeway's safety. Caden's playing it off. It's anti-radiation serum. That's what it is. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And Tuvok doesn't believe it. And he basically starts yelling and screaming, and he gets restrained.
They have to restrain him, and they inject him as well.
The same.
So he's remembering juju. This. We come back to real time, and he's on that balcony looking down on Janeway, having had this memory. He goes down to talk to her, and she's working very hard on this static circle thing that you get at Spencer's Gifts. And she's looking at the static and punching buttons, and I'm like, what does she see in the static? Like, I remember a lot of times we would We would have these, you know, alien ships where literally there'd just be like shapes and symbols. And we would look at them like, oh, yes, I'm picking up the information. It's like, this is the worst, though. You're looking at a static circle.
When you're talking the static, it just reminds me of ancient shamans that would take chicken bones and they would throw them down and read that. So maybe she was a new age modern shaman reading the static from the Spencer's.
She was pretending like it meant circle. Something.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of static. It's a stretch for me. But anyway, Tuvok approaches and he says to Janeway, I think we might know each other. And Janeway goes, oh yeah, you're Tuvok. We met, you know, at the shift briefing. Mm-hmm. He goes, no, before. So he's trying to test and see if she remembers what he's remembering.
Yeah.
And he talks about the hospital. He's kind of pushing her a bit.
It's an awkward scene too.
Yeah. Jaffin shows up.
Yeah.
Tuvok decides, not
worth it. Yeah. So it's just a misunderstanding. Jaffin says, what was that all about? Janeway says, I'm not sure. Strange man. And Jaffin says, and a terrible joke teller. That's where the line is.
But Jaffin basically says, are we going to have dinner again?
Yeah.
Her response is like, really? Again? Mm-hmm. He goes, you don't like my cooking? I love when she says, no, it was wonderful. A very funny scene. She ultimately says, let's have dinner, but I get to cook.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, she's a horrible cook.
Yeah, exactly. Not the right call.
But they agreed to have dinner again. And we cut back to the bar where Paris mm-hmm. works now. And there's B'Elanna sitting, reading a pad.
This is the first herself. Time he, yeah, this is the first time that Paris notices B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah.
Yeah. He immediately is captured by her beauty or drawn to her in some way. So again, this is what I love about this premise is there's a piece of them that's true underneath.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, hey, you've been in here before? And she goes, no, never been in here. And he goes, oh, I would have noticed if you had been in here.
That's kind of an old Paris line.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. You know, Tom's really kind of pushing to flirt with her. Amali, his boss, comes out. I need you. He wants to get to know B'Elanna a little better. And she's like, you know what? I don't want to take a walk with you. I'm not interested. And she stands up and he goes, oh, I get it now because she's pregnant. B'Elanna says, well, you still want to get together now? And he goes, well, no, you're married. She goes, no, I'm not married. And he goes, oh, okay. And she leaves. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand my look because I turned in that close up and I'm looking off at her and I guess it's just a look that he's trying to piece all this together.
He's trying to piece it together. Yeah. He's not sure. He's just trying to figure out what is her story.
Yeah.
That's it.
We go to space. There's a flyby. Yay. The ship is working. They've gotten primary systems. We have a Chakotay log again. Primary systems are back online. They're looking for the crew. They've left that nebula.
Kim's been running continuous scans to try to find our people. No sign of our people.
At the end of this log, he says, with only four people on board, repairs are going slowly. Mm-hmm. And I went, wait, he called the doctor a person. He's considering the doctor a person, which is kind of a big deal.
Wait a minute. Who's there? Kim?
Neelix, Chakotay, and the doctor.
Oh.
With only four people on board. He didn't say three people.
And a hologram.
A hologram.
There you go. The doctor doesn't have to fight for his rights anymore. Even Chakotay thinks of him as a person now.
Yep. There's a montage of repairs. We see in engineering, the doctor has restored propulsion systems. And then
secondary.
Kim calls him to astrometrics. Harry and the doctor talk in there. Harry basically says, I need you to help me with my stomach. I'm still
not with astrometrics work. The doctor thinks that Harry's asking for help there. And it's all about his sick tummy. That's it. Oh my gosh. And I love how Kim is so snarky. Whatever you did hasn't worked. Maybe all those command subroutines are compromising your medical abilities. And then of course the doctor fires right back. Maybe all that sarcasm is compromising your natural charm. And so there's a lot of
snarky. Those two are at each other.
My goodness. They're like brothers. They're like brothers right now.
We go to the bridge. The doctor shows up on the bridge with Chakotay, says, he soothed Ensign Kim's upset tummy.
Yeah. No, but then he lists that at the end. That was just funny. He's like, I've repaired the deuterium injectors, brought secondary propulsion back online, and soothed Ensign Kim's upset tummy. So he adds that as the third item of his to-do list. Very funny. Yeah.
And then Chakotay says, why don't you get started on the ruptured plasma conduits? And the doctor says, wait, can't you take care of those? I was like, whoa. He's starting to get a little cocky here just because he's been called a person. Even Chakotay says, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
But the doctor says, well, I'm the emergency command hologram. Shouldn't I be in the command center?
Oh, God.
And then Chakotay says, we've got to prioritize. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but we need to prioritize here.
Can we just call him Reality Check Chakotay? There you go.
Yes.
Carrie calls to say, I found the crew. They're on an M-class planet.
Yeah.
Like it'd be
found
there.
On the crew. Days. Exactly. Yeah. We can be there.
Yes.
So Chakotay says, transfer the coordinates to the helm and I'll meet you in Astrometrics. And then he says to the doctor, the command center is yours. And the doctor sits and sort of enjoys his command position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice little repair sequence. They found the crew. Feels like we're on a journey to solve this.
Yeah, good scenes. We like these scenes.
Great scenes. Go to Jaffin's apartment. Very funny when they try Janeway's cooking, and great face acting when she's like, your cooking console's a little temperamental. And she says, once you cut off the charred part, it'll be fine. And he tries a piece.
He does say, did you try talking to it? I'm making fun of the whole thing, her talking to the console, right? Yes.
But I loved when he took a bite and his face acting without any lines. And she's asking, is it good? It's good?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Very funny. They decide to leave, but Jaffin stops her and says, no, let's not leave. We'll stay here.
He says he's not really hungry. And he says, are you? And Janeway says, no. And when he says, let's stay here, okay. This kiss bothered me because it honestly gave me the energy of two 13-year-olds or two 14, like teenagers. Yeah. It was like, you guys are like, where is this like awkward, like fast kiss thing that they did?
It was just very, very aggressive.
Very aggressive. But what I'm saying? This is when you're 16. Yeah. This is when you're 15 or 16 years old. This is what happens.
I feel like this was not just this episode kiss. This was Kate Mulgrew thinking Janeway has deserved a love story for 7 years. And every love story has either been cut off or, she's distracted with her position or it's been a hologram or something.
Okay. So that would validate it then. That aggressive kiss comes from the fact that subconsciously she has been trying to hold it together to bring this crew home
for seven years, no
time for herself.
And now she doesn't have all that pressure
because she doesn't know she has those pressures. Nope. Yeah. But subconsciously, she's so hungry for affection. She's so hungry for companionship, romantic companionship that this is. Immediately. Okay. Well, then
all of that pent up energy comes out after 7 years.
All right. Well, then it was like
a theater kiss. It was that
it
big.
Really was. My it gosh. Was yeah. Massive. Thank you for clearing that up for me.
We go to space. We see Voyager entering kind of the orbit of this planet now. And there's all these satellite ships.
Another first officer's log. We trace the crew's life sign to this large city on a planet called Quora. Unfortunately, the local officials are not being very cooperative. And that's when we see John Aniston pop on screen, on the view screen.
He basically says, we've talked to these people you say are your friends, but they don't know you and they've never heard of Voyager. So sorry.
Yeah.
And Chakotay wants to talk to them. And he says, nope, you cannot. They're protected by our laws.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny? Their law is to protect against other people trying to poach workers from them. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they basically run out of luck. The ambassador says, well, you should look somewhere else to increase your labor supply if that's what you want. Leave our citizens alone.
Kim does report there's no way to beam them through this shield grid that is interfering with our transporters, which would be an easy out of this episode if we just transport everyone back on the ship. But no way. So Chakotay does make the order, let's get out of orbit. The doctor complains, saying, wait, we're going to leave them behind. But no, this is what we have to show.
Yes,
to these Quarren ambassadors.
He wants them to think that we're leaving, but he's got another plan.
Yeah, the whole thing is we have to fool Jennifer Aniston's father, basically. Yes. That yes. is the goal. Okay.
But I believed in Chakotay at this point. I'm like, he's got this. He's got some kind of plan.
I believed him too. I thought he could do it. Definitely.
We go back to Jaffin's apartment after that big theater kiss. And clearly it's postcoital. It's postcoital. Jaffin's lounging. She comes out. He says, are you comfortable? And she says, the blanket's nice and warm. He goes, no, I mean, are you comfortable here with me? And she says, I can't remember being more comfortable in my entire life. Wow.
That's huge.
Yes.
What a huge statement. What a statement.
Does that mean that she was unhappy being captain? Like, subconsciously? Yes.
Well, she was not comfortable. Not that she was unhappy. She was not comfortable. I think she's happy as a captain at times, but she was not comfortable.
Okay. I also have a question. Postcoital scene.
Yeah.
She's bringing out hot coffee. Would not be my choice.
No.
I don't know that people go, oh, we just had sex. Let's drink some hot black coffee now. Yeah, no. I don't know. It would not be my beverage of choice.
Listen, if it was postcoitus between us, I'd bring you a nice spritzer, Robbie. I'd say, here's a nice effervescent little spritzer with a little bit of
something refreshing, light.
Refresh you after
I've like had, a hot beverage.
Yeah. If I've had nookie with you, Robbie, I'm going to give you something refreshing afterwards. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Megan just walked around from the corner and started staring at me. She's like, what are you talking about? You're right. Coffee would not be the beverage of choice after that.
Okay, we go to the bar next. Torres is sitting by herself. Paris goes to talk to her. And I just felt like this is Paris, good guy. Like, even if he doesn't know who he is or who she is, his instincts now as the character he is, is he's a good guy.
Well, especially when you shock her with, you know, I was offering to introduce you to some people I met that are expecting a baby like you. I mean, she's like, what?
I thought you'd want to get to know some other parents. She's very defensive at first. She apologizes.
Yeah.
You know, she turns here in this scene.
Yeah.
She does say, I can't be romantic with anybody right now, but thank you. And Paris says, what about a friend? And she goes, what? And he says, well, if romance is out of the question, could you use a friend?
Yeah.
Very sweet scene.
It is.
We go just a nice turn for her. And then we go out to space and we see Voyager hovering in space. We go in the astrometrics lab.
Yeah.
Neelix is working in the astrometrics lab. Everybody's doing everything they never do.
He's never worked there before, has he?
No.
Wow.
But he's been speaking to captains of 8 vessels who left Quora. He says they were all asked if he was looking for employment because there's a labor shortage in the entire system and there's a big competition for workers.
Yeah.
So it's definitely starting to make sense what's going on.
Yeah.
They talk about re-entering the system, going back, and Chakotay says, no, we're going to have to find jobs there. We're going to have to go undercover, basically.
Yeah.
And we can't take the ship because it might arouse suspicion. And Neelix goes, what if we take my ship? Chakotay says, we're going to have to go look for jobs. And he says to the doctor, isn't reconstructive surgery one of your specialties?
So he won't be recognized.
They won't be recognized. We cut to sick bay and Chakotay has had his reconstructive surgery with a whole different, like his cheekbones are different and he doesn't have a tattoo.
Yes. Yeah.
Neelix says in this scene, you should have posed as Talaxian. And Chakotay says, whiskers make me itch. But I wish he had gone as a Talaxian.
God, that would have been amazing.
Yes.
We should all look like Talaxians at one point in one episode.
I know.
That would have been cool.
That would have been fun. Mm-hmm. The doctor asks for Neelix's hand to put a subdermal transponder in so they can maintain an open calm. Why don't we just do that all the time?
Yeah. And you see that? They dropped it in his palm first, bloop, and then he just scanned that thing over, and that thing just sort of recesses into his skin, I guess. That was interesting.
It was cool.
Yeah.
As we wrap the scene up, Chakotay says, you know, Harry, you're in charge. And the doctor's like, wait, I thought I was going to be in charge.
Yeah.
And Harry's very upset.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, well, I've got 2 million tactical subroutines. That should outrank an ensign.
Yeah, but you know what Harry should have said? I have 2 million hours on the bridge in the last 6 years. You have what, 5 minutes?
Five minutes.
That's what he should have said. So I have experience. He may have subroutines, but I've got the experience.
Well, they start to bicker, and Chakotay says, "Gentlemen, work it out." And they say, "Aye, sir," together. And then they start to, they're standing shoulder to shoulder, and they both start to walk out at the same time. Harry and the doctor, they bump into each other. Like, who's going to go first? Harry ends up going first, and
this
Doc
was,
rolls his eyes. It was a very funny bit.
This was Bob, actually. This is Bob Picardo.
Oh, it's because he's great.
He said when we were filming this scene, he was like, "Garrett, I think this might add a little extra element of humor if we do that thing where we sort of both try to leave at the same time and we bump into each other." I'm like, okay, if you want to go for this. And I remember Cricker did direct this first one, right? Yeah. So yep, Cricker was like, "Hey, yeah, let's try it." So it was a Bob originated idea. Yeah, it was a Bob pitch on set. So that we did that. And it was great. It was cute. It was funny.
It was very funny.
Very, very rom-com kind of a scene, you know, in a way. So yeah, I liked it.
We cut out to space. We see Neelix's ship exit the shuttle bay. Cool shot. Very cool. Back at the plant, Seven is doing her job, finds Tuvok. Mm-hmm. And she says that he's neglected to report for his last 3 inoculations.
Mm-hmm. He knows what's up. That's why.
He's been avoiding it. And he is looking sweaty. Yeah. He's looking, like he's having withdrawals or something.
Yes, he looks definitely like he's going through something, for sure.
And he even calls her 7 of 9. And she's like, "What are you talking about? My employee number is 8586.
Stop right there. Employee number. Let's do numerology here. Check this out. 8 + 5 = 13. 13 + 8 = 21. 21 + 6 = 27. Separate the 2 and 7. You get 9. So even her employee number got the 9 in it.
Wow.
That's all. Okay. I just want to share that with you.
Tuvok tries to mind meld her here.
Yeah.
She doesn't remember who she is, so he's going to mind meld her.
Yeah.
She calls security. She sees herself stepping off of her regeneration alcove. Mm-hmm. So she does have a moment where she realizes, or she has a flashback.
Yeah.
But then security grabs him and drags him away. And mm-hmm. Tuvok is yelling, "We don't belong here. We don't belong here."
I think we've all yelled that at one point as characters. Like, "I don't belong here. I'm not part of this," or something like that.
Yeah.
To that effect.
It was good, though. But he's planted the seed in Seven. She's now got some wisdom.
Passage of time, I think, to the next day. Mm-hmm. Yes. We have the supervisor now interviewing Chakotay, mm-hmm. Talking about all his qualifications. And he's impressed with what Chakotay has going for him. So he's very excited to have him working at the plant. But during this conversation, Chakotay does recognize one of our regular background actors, I guess, and sort of stops. The supervisor notices that and thinks that's a little unusual. Someone Chakotay goes, no, just a lot of unusual species. And supervisor, mm-hmm. Corroborates that. We have a diverse workforce.
He then sees Janeway.
Yes.
The supervisor realizes that he's not paying attention.
Yeah.
And so he covers with, "Well, I'm just excited to be here. Sorry." Mm-hmm. And the supervisor says, "Okay, carry on," leaves. Then Chakotay goes over to Captain Janeway and calls her Catherine, and she says yes. So he thinks maybe she's going to remember. He goes, "It's Chakotay."
Yeah.
And she goes, "What? I'm sorry."
But he pivots very fast. He immediately goes like, "Oh, I'm new here." He doesn't pull the whole Tuvok like, "You have to remember me."
Yeah.
He's just like, "I'm new. I just was told just that you would be." Yeah, the supervisor said you would be a good person to answer questions. So he covers perfectly. There's nothing she could say to that. So he just introduces himself.
And he says, "My employment file lists my name as Amal Kotay."
Amal Kotay.
I like it.
Kotay. Amal Kotay.
Yeah.
Hey, he should have said his name was Akuchi Moya. He just should have went with that.
I know. That would have been so much better. Janeway says, "Well, happy to meet you, whatever your name is." And we cut into the medical facility where Tuvok is being held down. Don Most, our Dr. Caden, is says you're just having a relapse of dysphoria syndrome and you need the shot. And Tuvok tries to fight it, but they finally inject him.
Yeah.
And then we cut inside the bar, and Neelix has obviously met Tom before, you know, the scene starts mid scene because mm-hmm. Neelix has picked up on the same thing Chakotay did, that we don't remember the yeah. truth. He's talking to Tom about how he got this job.
That one line.
Although I love the one line where
this Neelix part, says,
Neelix says, it's almost like serving on a starship, you know? And Paris goes, wow, have you ever done that? Neelix says, well, you're looking at the former captain of my own cargo vessel. And Paris, wow, must be quite a life. Yeah. Neelix goes, what about you? Ever worked on a ship? And Paris's response is, oh no, space travel makes me sick. I laughed out loud.
I did too. Funny. I did too. That was very funny.
We see B'Elanna's there and she's now with a couple that maybe the one that Tom introduced her to.
Yeah.
And she's starting to make some friends.
Chakotay shows up and Janeway invites Chakotay and Neelix sort of to have dinner with her and Jaffin. But Jaffin's sort of like, no, no, no. I was hoping we could eat alone tonight. And Janeway is a little, you know, confused. And she's like, that was rude. But he was like, no, I have an important thing to tell you. I must have you by myself, basically.
Mm-hmm. Tom and B'Elanna talk briefly. He says, hey, I'm about to go on a break. Yeah. I'll walk you to the transport. And she's like, oh, don't worry. I'll be fine. And Tom's response is, I'm not worried about you.
Yeah,
it's not you that I'm worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby. Oh, the baby will be fine
too. So cute.
Sweet moment.
Yes.
And there's a sweet look at the end there. Like she stops and looks back at him.
Yeah.
Neelix and Chakotay, though, follow her out.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
And then we go over to hear what Jaffin was, why he wanted Janeway alone.
Yeah.
And he basically says, I think we should move in together.
I know. That's fast.
And she goes, they talk briefly and then she's like, all right, let's do it. Let's try it. She says, maybe I'm out of my mind. Let's try it. And I went,
yeah, you are crazy. Out of your mind.
You're out of your mind. You just met this guy. Oh my gosh. We go out to the alley. Taurus is walking by herself. Neelix is following her.
Neelix is scary in the fog like that coming after her. I'd be scared with all that crazy hair coming behind me.
Looking back, and then Chakotay bumps her from the other side.
Yeah.
He apologizes. Oh, my fault. He tries to tell her that they were friends. He's trying to get her to remember. She's not really listening. He grabs her and pulls her into the side of the alley. And she starts freaking out. She punches him. Neelix grabs her from behind. B'Elanna calls for security. Help, help, help. Chakotay calls Voyager. Lock on to Neelix's signal, transport them both back. Harry says, acknowledged. We go back and Neelix and B'Elanna beam out.
Right. But I can't beam out Chakotay though. He's running for his life, basically.
Yeah. She's rescued. Chakotay's on the run. We cut back to the bridge and Harry is flying the ship.
Yeah.
You're sitting in my chair.
Are you upset?
You're sitting, how did it feel? Do you remember?
I like sitting down there. I do.
It's a good spot. The only thing I didn't like, I remember I felt this from day one. Everybody's behind me. And I have personally issue with like people. Like if I go to the movies, I like to sit in the back. I don't like people behind me.
Behind you, yeah.
I get a little paranoid.
Yeah. No, we know that about you.
Trust people.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being down there, I couldn't see anybody's face.
No.
I could never see how, you know, could hear.
I think that's why you brought a book all the time to the bridge, because you couldn't really see anyone. So you said, you know what? I'll be in my own world down here at Con. Yeah. So, okay.
You're flying the ship. You're under attack. You had to raise shields. You couldn't bring Chakotay back on the ship.
No.
We have a space shot of Voyager leaving orbit. Two ships are trailing after him, chasing him. We go to sick bay. Neelix is trying to explain, we're here to help you. She doesn't want help. We see Tuvok in the Korn medical facility. He's being brainwashed again with this giant screwdriver thing headed towards his head.
Not good.
Yeah, we go to the bar. Janeway and Jaffin are kissing. We're just cutting all around the world. Finally, we're back to our foot chase with Chakotay, and the security is getting closer and he gets to like a dead end. And I remembered when I saw this, I remember specifically Krieger talking about how they would build this dead end on the stairs and then put a giant green screen out there so that when you cut around to the other side, you'd see that he was looking down at you know,
at how high up he was and everything. The bottom of the factory. Sure.
I remember I may have even gone over when they were filming this or something.
Okay, okay.
Because they did have to set up a giant green screen.
Wow.
Back in a really tight corner. Because like we said before, this was all the backside of places that weren't supposed to be photographed.
They weren't no one has ever filmed there until we did.
No.
It's like, these are like utility. This is strictly for the
tiny inner.
The inner workings of it's just stuff that you don't film in. It's mainly for maintenance stuff, for HVAC things that we were talking about. That's it. Stuff that's supposed to be hidden from public view, but we used it to film this episode, which is quite creative, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. But he gets to that dead end. He hits a force field. Yeah, there's like some kind of force field there, and all he can do is look down.
Yeah.
Security's on his tail, and then we have
to be continued. Dot dot dot.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a lesson from this first part of this?
I do, actually.
Okay.
I do. My lesson is that even when the truth is repressed or suppressed, that truth will find a way to break through.
Mm.
That's the lesson I got, because even though all these characters had been brainwashed and their memories were buried, somehow Tom Paris's true nature still came out. B'Elanna's true nature still came out.
Okay.
Janeway's true nature still came out.
Yeah.
Tuvok's nature. It's just, you can't hide from reality is the real life lesson.
Okay.
Reality is always there, even if you try to pretend it's not.
Yeah. 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 All righty.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so I'm going to say my lesson from this episode is that we all need to work on cultivating and practicing patience. Patience is key. The doctor had to evade enemy ship after enemy ship, and one person repairing system after system had to have patience. Finding the crew, Harry Kim searching every single sector in this quadrant practically, had to be patient. So I find like this episode is all about just finding patience. Because that's the only way to get anything done is be patient, do it bit by bit. Don't expect massive, results day one. It's all incremental. It builds upon each move you do, each step that you make to get to a solution builds upon the prior step, right? So it's a gradual process and it's patience.
I buy that.
Your rating for this episode, I know it's high. It's going to be a high one. What'd you give it?
I like this one.
Okay.
You may be surprised, but I'm going to give it a 9.5.
Good Lord.
9.5. This one had me. I was in every turn, every twist. Love this one. 9.5.
Oh my God. I'm shocked.
What about you?
I don't even know what to say right now. I don't even have a number because of what you've just said. It's just, you've just short circuited my brain. Are you serious? You're 9.5?
Yes, sir. I sure am.
I can't do that. I can't go that high.
Okay.
8.2.
What? Only an 8.2?
How mad you are. Okay. Let's go.
Captains and Admirals average rating for Workforce Part 1 is 7.9.
Thank you. Thank you. I only went 8 because you went 9. I said, because I was going to go 7. I said, no, Robbie's going to throw a shoe at me if I say 7. 5. Jeez, 7.9. Loved so close it. To 8.2. Well, I'm glad you liked it. It's, objective, really. So, and this may be a 9.9 for somebody else.
Yeah.
You don't even know. Someone likes it even more than you do.
Yeah. I like this one a lot.
I do like the elements, but I honestly thought the minute that you saw that people didn't remember who they were, you were going to just slap it down like you did that other episode.
Normally I would. Well, the other one, because we were playing characters, like
Yeah.
Like, this like is just, were, they've taken away our memory, but we're still kind of the same people.
Yep.
Just in a whole different reality.
Yep.
That we're unaware of our other reality. And so we're still the same people. Okay. I buy that.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel like a bridge too far to me. In fact, that's a really interesting premise to me.
Yeah, it is.
So.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this recap discussion of Workforce Part 1. Join Robbie and I next week when we will finish up this two-parter and recap and discuss Workforce Part 2, one of your favorites.
Favorite episodes so far.
All right, everyone. See you next week.
Yeah, thanks. See you next week. Bye.